believe it or not, we have never done an album retrospective on Pink Floyd. As Pittsburgh Kevin would say, what's up with that? So on this week's Lutini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we will be discussing one of the albums that actually made classic rock classic. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Lutini Rock and Roll Circus. Moms and dads, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini. I am your ringmaster for this thing they call the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Each week we come to you, we talk to you about music. We pick some, like, either music history topic, or we pit people against each other that shouldn't really be pit against each other and get you guys all pissed off, right? You know, we do album retrospectives like we're going to do now. We do a lot of different things here, different kinds of countdowns. If that's your thing, you've come to the right place. Please like, share, subscribe, whatever you're looking on. If there's not a subscribe, there's a rate, there's a review, something like that. Please help us out. Throw those things our way. We do really appreciate it. We have some websites for you to check out. Please check out LouLombardiMusic.com. That'll get you access to giveaways like the one we're doing tonight. And if you're not on air, you missed it. Dark Side of the Moon. And Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.com. There's a lot of really cool stuff both those places, so check them out. I want to give a shout out to a couple of sponsors. Wolf's Customs. Guys, I've been telling you for about 10 years now, there's no reason to go out with the same boring-looking musical instrument, right? So go out and get an awesome custom finish done on your musical instrument. And this is professional stuff. This isn't a guy, with a freaking miner's hat on and a can of spray paint. This is somebody, giant Coke bottle glasses. Now, this is somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. His name's Chris Thunder Wolf Dotson. He's an awesome guy. And you go to wolfscustoms.online, and you can see great examples of the work. There's reviews and everything there. So check them out. Also, one time to Rock Rage Radio. We love you, Rock Rage Radio. Thank you so much for your patience over the past few weeks. I've had a few issues, they've been very gracious with me about getting the podcast uploaded. So go to rockrageradio.com, download the app, and you can listen to great music and great programming like this, as well as specialty shows by somebody named Lily V6.
Wow. I get the fun sound effect. Yes, mine is Hot Licks with Lily 6.
I just grabbed the fastest one I could.
Hot Licks with Lily 6 on Rock Rage Radio Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay.
And there it is.
And boom goes
the dynamite.
Pop goes the dynamite.
Okay.
Oh, Lordy.
There it is. There you are. I fell up. Right, I was stuck in there. Yikes. That was really in there, and I had to get it out. Now it feels a lot better. So, wait a minute. I'm getting a message. Okay. I'm getting a message from Joe Freeman. Hold on.
Hold on.
You have great energy tonight. Oh, okay.
It was a compliment.
Usually it's like, we can't
see
hear
you.
Can't see. Mike, you're Lou, your mic's too low. Or Mike, your Lou is too low. Pittsburgh Kevin's being too rude.
Well,
duh. I'm just kidding.
I kind of feel like that's not a thing.
But no, thank you, Mr. Freeman. No relation to Morgan Freeman. I've asked him many times. He has no relation.
That was the longest night Ludini ever spent.
Okay, we were talking about Rock Rage Radio and Lily V6. Lily V6 has her own show.
I do, which I said. Was Hot Licks with Lily 6.
I'm sorry. I felt like we needed to. I don't have a sound effect for going backwards. Oh, how about this? We needed to do that and get this thing straightened out.
There we go.
Okay. So, yes, I have a sound effect thing.
Heaven help us.
Here we go. That sounded like a Mugwai.
If there's anyone out there who can help
the Mugwai sound effect. So we're really excited to get into this topic tonight. We are doing a giveaway. We're not doing it at this just a second, but we're going to say we're going to get about halfway through this, okay? And we're going to tell you guys what you have to do to get the to get the CD.
Not the album.
And not the
CD.
Well, it is the album, but
what
it's
is
on
the
CD.
Album? It's on CD.
And this, check this out. This is a super deluxe edition with all kind of extra stuff. Very, very cool. I didn't even know this when I started this promotion. I got it and I saw this.
The extra special fancy.
Yeah, some
fancy.
Kind of like extras and everything. So it looks really, really cool. So whoever's going to get this is going to get something really awesome. Michael Goltz thinks he's automatically going to win. He might win.
He might.
You play. Play to win, my friend. Mm. Think positive thoughts. Get good energy going, you know. So, anyways, that is what we're getting into tonight. And maybe we should have our resident rock historian kind of give us a little bit of stuff.
Yeah,
just a little bit of a background on this bad boy.
The Dark Side of the Moon, released March 1st, 1973 by Pink Floyd. The eighth studio album. Primarily developed during live performances, the band premiered an early version of the record several months before recording began. It was conceived as an album that focused on the pressures faced by the band during their arduous lifestyle and dealing with the apparent mental health problems suffered by former band member Syd Barrett, who departed the group in 1968. New material was recorded in two sessions in 1972 and 1973 at Abbey Road Studios in London. Mm. They were assigned staff engineer Alan Parsons,
mm-hmm.
who had worked as assistant tape operator on its album Adam Hart Mother and gained experience as a record engineer on the Beatles Abbey Road and Let It Be. It explored themes such as conflict, greed, time, death, mental illness, as a lot of the titles of the songs reflect.
Right.
Snippets from interviews with the band's road crew were featured alongside philosophical quotations. The sleeve depicts the prism spectrum, which was designed by Storm Thorgerson in response to keyboardist Richard Wright's request for a simple and bold design representing the band's lighting and the album's themes. It was promoted with the two singles, Money and Us and Them. The record helped propel Pink Floyd to international fame, bringing wealth and recognition to all four of its members. A blockbuster release of the album era also propelled record sales throughout the music industry during the 70s. It has been certified 14 times platinum in the United Kingdom and topped the U.S. Billboard Top LPs and Tape chart, where it has charted for 958 weeks in total.
Wow.
With estimated sales of over 45 million copies.
Yeah, I was watching the classic albums, and somebody said, yeah, it's been like on the chart, like total of 147 weeks. I'm like, and I think it's been a few more than
that. It's been like, you know, 1,000. Most commercially successful album by the band and one of the best-selling albums worldwide in 2013, it was selected for preservation in the United States National Recording Registry by the Library of Congress for being culturally, historically, and aesthetically significant. Each side of the album is a continuous piece of music. The five tracks on each side reflect various stages of human life, beginning and ending with a heartbeat exploring the nature of the human experience. Hmm. So that's my brief history.
These guys, when they lost Syd Barrett, they kind of became...
I was showing. Oh, they kind of frozen.
We froze.
Oh.
Hold on, I can fix it. Pink Floyd was really in a pickle because their singer... And songwriter, the guy that sang and wrote all the songs, lost his mind. He literally went
bonkers.
And if I wasn't speaking right now and telling you about this, that would have been an awesome place for sound effect. So I think that what we're going to do is when we do the sound effect thing, we're going to maybe have Pittsburgh Kevin handle that.
We're going to let him do that job.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a good job for him.
Okay.
Well, I'll continue to talk while you're
doing
anyway,
that. But anyway, so what I wanted to get into really quick, if you just guys give me a second here, it's right back, guys. Calm down. We're back.
There you go. We're back.
I just, let
you're
me get
live.
The thing here.
Look at that beautiful woman.
And it doesn't matter for him.
Oh, he's cute.
And there's Lily too.
Here's you guys won't let me. They won't let me talk.
Sorry.
The main thing that the singer and the songwriter, boom. What happens to your band usually, right?
It dies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're like done.
Right in the pooper.
And these guys were like, but they didn't want to be over. And David Gilmour was a friend, and they liked playing with him. They liked his guitar playing. They were buddies, and so they found a way to continue on, and they were kind of directionless. And it was in an era where you could release kind of experimental music, and as long as you weren't making too many demands on the record label, they'd kind of let you kind of do like kind of what you wanted to a bit. They were like, those hippies are up to something. Maybe it'll be good and we'll get rich. And so they did these records that were really space rock. just like a lot of free form kind of improvisation. But when they did metal, M-E-D-D-E-L-L-E.
I don't know how it's spelled, but I know what you mean.
Like heavy metal.
No.
They did Echoes was one side, which is a kind of a space rock kind of, you know, jazz odyssey.
I like how you said it.
A Spinal Tap might say. but on the other side, this is where they were said they wrote songs. They were all they kind of like just individual songs. So this was the beginning of this sort of, you know, new direction for them. And a lot like I've talked a lot about. Kevin and I have talked a lot about, Keith and I have as well, about how Moving Pictures for Rush is this album where they had, you know, kind of been playing around with all these different things, and then boom, it kind of all comes together like real succinctly. And I think The Dark Side of the Moon is Pink Floyd's version mm-hmm. of that, where these different things they were kind of playing around with and sound effects and studio things, they found a way to kind of bring together and like have an awesome set of tracks as well that we all know and freaking love. These are classic songs. Every single one of them are, including things like Speak to Me where's the one? Running. Where is it? On the Run, that are just kind of like sound effect
right.
things. You know them. You go, oh, yeah, I know. It's Pink Floyd. Because the yeah. radio has played it. And, you know, it's just this record is like kind of an old friend. You know what I mean? It's one of the songs comes on the radio. You go, oh, yeah. Cool.
It's definitely a go-to album.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And so the band really kind of brought it all together with this. And Alan Parsons was a big part of that. And, you know, when he talks about it, you can tell they're very, as he should be, very proud of what they all accomplished together. So. Good stuff. We're going to get into more stuff here. What do you got, Lily?
Well, I talked about the success of it a little earlier. Obviously, they were on the charts for 958 weeks. But the success of the album brought wealth to all four members of the band. Richard Wright and Roger Waters both bought large country houses. Nick Mason became a collector of upmarket cars. Some of the profits were invested in the production of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Shrubbery.
With their shrubberies. Engineer Alan Parsons received a Grammy Award nomination for Best Engineered Recording.
I fought in your general direction.
Non-classical for The Dark Side of the Moon, he won that for. He went on to have a successful career as a recording artist with the Alan Parsons Project. Waters and Gilmore have on occasion downplayed his contribution to the success of the album. Mason praised his role. In 2003, Parsons reflected, I think they all felt that I managed to hang the rest of my career on Dark Side of the Moon, which has an element of the truth to it, but I still wake up occasionally frustrated about the fact that they made untold millions and a lot of people involved in the record did not.
Well, so. Just think about this. For all the bands... my beard's grabbing the microphone.
Wow.
For all the bands that have gotten screwed, you know, the musicians made nothing.
Right.
They put out this giant record and they got zip, zip, zip. It's kind of refreshing to hear that, you know, the hometown boys, you know, did all right, especially after what they've been through with losing Syd Barrett.
Right.
Right. Legit.
Have you guys, and I don't know how many of you are like big enough Pink Floyd fans to know that like there are Pink Floyd songs like on the oldies stations. A lot mm-hmm. of the classic rock mm-hmm. stations. That's kind of how far back these guys go. See Emily Play. Is that yeah, that's one of them.
Old.
Yes. And that have a complete sound. If you were to say, oh yeah, this is the band that did Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall and Wish You Were Here, you'd be like, what? Nah.
Yeah.
That, you know, what are you smoking? Obviously not the same thing that Pink Floyd was smoking. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Lily.
To talk a little bit about the packaging, like we talked about earlier, that is the prism. It's the gatefold. This is the original issue. Unfortunately, I don't have the stickers or the poster that came with it, which it did originally come with. I bought this at a garage sale for like $1. But they did all decide to use the prism because it was so simplistic and it's symbolistic of sort of everything that is on the album. So there's that.
Well, let's talk about that album cover.
Let's do that.
This is one of those things. This is a meme.
This is a meme.
I mean, this is one of those things that's like universally recognized. Even people that don't know what Pink Floyd is.
They know what this is.
They know what this is. They've seen that. They have absolutely seen it. It's every freaking place.
It was inspired by a photograph of a prism with color beam projected through it that Thorgerson, who I said earlier, had found in a photography book. So this is a common photo. You can see it all over the place. The artwork was created by their associate, George Hardy. I feel like the record's going to fall out of here. Okay. There were actually seven designs initially. And I could not find all seven designs to actually have visual aids on that, but the four members agreed that this one was the best. It's the glass prism, as I said, 100 times. It represents three elements: the band stage lighting, the album lyrics, and Wright's request for a simple and bold design.
Yeah. It's absolutely perfect. It makes a statement. It does it simple but bold. It makes a statement. It's instantly recognizable, and it does keep the band from having to put their faces on the cover.
They were not attractive men.
It just wasn't going to be their thing. There's so many smart things about what they did, you know, with this record. It's just in general is how they handle things. Very, very cool. Much respect to the Pink Floyders. So, what do we want to do?
We'll go track by track, maybe?
We could track by track it. Sure. By track it, Mr. Kevin.
Oh, my gosh.
Mr. Kevin. Hey, Mr. Kevin.
Is that a banana
in your pocket?
What? Stop looking. Hey, my eyes are up here. Come on now. They're up here.
Well...
You've got sound effects on both sides of you.
I know. I'm feeling real.
I have sound effects on both sides of me without those things.
That's true.
So there's that.
So, go ahead. Let's go track by track.
Track
you want to start?
Track.
I will track. I will go with you.
All right. Speak to me.
No.
No? You don't want to? All right. The first track on Dark Side of the Moon. Forms an overture. Nick Mason receives a rare solo writing credit for the track through Recollections. Recollections differ as to the reasons for this, Mason states that he created the track himself, whereas Richard Wright and Roger Waters stated the credit was a gift to Mason to give him some publishing income. A live version is included in Pulse. The song itself is a sound collage which features no lyrics. It does contain parts of conversation tapes that Pink Floyd recorded, as well as a short snippet of Claire Torrey's vocal performance on The Great Gig in the Sky, which is a great song, and consists of a series of sound effects. It leads into the first performance piece on the album, Breathe. As a result, they are usually played together on the radio, and most later re-releases merge the two songs together.
It is really interesting, because this is not something you would typically associate with something you would be played on the radio.
Or right? Even a first song.
But everybody knows it. And, you know, I was just for shits and giggles, I looked to see, I Googled Dark Side of the Moon overrated. Just to kind of see, because there's always going to be, you know, it's been, what, 40?
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the crazy money.
73.
I wasn't aware there's going to be math.
Somebody can do the math for us.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
do that.
And, you know, you're looking at it with different, you have to put it in time. You have to put it in place in time. It's, you know, I don't know how to explain it other than that. Like, if it came out today, it would just be some weird record.
Yeah, it wouldn't work today.
But, you know, you have to put it, but anyway, some people were criticizing things, and I could tell that they were younger and just did not understand the impact that this had, and not just the music, but the whole idea of it. And the idea that they could put these, like, soundscape things on there. What I also wanted to tell you guys about is these voices, and Lily mentioned that. This appears several times on the album. And they got the idea, as Nick Mason said, at the cantina. And Roger Waters went back to the studio and wrote note cards with questions on it. And they just got random people, like different roadies and helpers and office people, and went ask them these questions. And they started out asking them like real easy questions to kind of, get them loosened up. But then they would ask them questions like, when was the last time you got violent with somebody? And then were you in the right? It's just the kind, and so they were taking snippets of these things out, and these people were all kind of weirdos, and you know, at the time that they knew, and so the answers were really interesting. So if you really listen to some of that stuff, you hear some really like kind of wacky stuff in there. It's very, very cool. So do we want to talk about Breathe?
Let's talk about Breathe
because sure. We've sort of covered.
part of it there.
Yeah.
The composition of this song is credited to Dave Gilmour and Richard Wright for the music and Roger Waters for the lyrics. Darkside admitted the latter is an adolescent and naive in preoccupations, but I'm not belittling it. It is like a rather wonderful, naive painting. Breathe in the air. Don't be afraid to care. That's the opening couplet. This is by, obviously, Roger Waters saying this. It's kind of simplistic stuff. The song is slow-paced and rich in texture and features Gilmour playing the electric guitar with a univibe, and I don't know what that is, but I liked reading about all the things they did use in this because it was so different of an album, so I just wrote it in here as well, and a lap steel guitar with a volume pedal and several overdubs. On the original album, it is a separate track from Speak to Me, the sound collage that opens the first side. Since this track segues into Breathe via a sustained backwards piano chord, the two are conjoined on most CD versions of the album. Breathe is seen as Gilmour carving out a more distinctive style with the introduction of blues bass chords and solos. It also has been seen to embrace ecology. The song was one of several to be considered for the band's Best Of album, Echoes, the Best of Pink Floyd. And I love this song, and I love when people play this song in a bar.
It is a...
especially when I'm real
drunk. Well, you said that you liked when people play it in a bar, so did you know that there are cover versions of this song?
I did know that, but I did not write those down.
Pearl Jam and Blind Melon.
Blind Melon? Oh, that's interesting. Wow. I would like to hear that one.
Yep.
I don't care about Pearl Jam.
They care about you.
They probably don't.
This is a the song is the story of this older guy telling a baby to breathe, to kind of, you know, and this is a sort of exactly.
And there it is.
All right, shut up.
And sort of like the journey that then begins, you know, through life. And Roger Waters said that he had this epiphany. And he didn't say it was drug induced, but it may have been. He said he had this epiphany. He says that his mother like drilled it into his head, like, you know, all your childhood and all your adolescence and all that is just to prepare you for life to start. And as at one point after they had been doing what they were doing for a while, he realized, he goes, oh my God, life started. Shit, how did life get started?
Now what?
I missed it. Like, you know, what? How do I, you know, jump in? He has this great line in there, you know, no one told you when to run. You missed the starting gun. Mm-hmm. But he says that he feels that the song was kind of hopeful in the sense that, like, at any time you can kind of jump in, mm-hmm. and get control and do what it is that you need to do. It's an absolutely, like, gorgeous song. It's, you know, it's so interesting for being, like, a... big rock album that gets played on the big, like, classic rock stations. Like, most of it's very mellow.
Yeah, for sure.
Most of it's mellow. And
I
trippy.
Feel like it's a stoner album.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
I know.
I would not a darn.
You're so straight
thing.
Edge.
Listen, guys, in like 5 minutes, 5 minutes. we're gonna give you the instructions.
Ooh.
Don't even show it yet. Don't
it's
even
hot.
Show it.
It's hiding.
No. Don't even show it on the camera. People can see it on camera.
It's not even on that side.
Well, I don't want them to even know how we're doing it.
You already said it.
No, I said it before we started the recording.
No.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't, because people already picked numbers.
Your Honor, play back the tape.
I told them not to pick numbers.
Go to the game tape.
If you already picked, if you did something like pick a number, it does not count. It's when I told you guys at the beginning, it's when I say that we're starting the contest, and we're not starting the contest for a few more
69,
minutes.
69, dude!
Exactly.
Oh, there all we right. go.
So,
it's not.
Start
you
over.
Know, you know, your numbers are all going to be valid because we're going to change how we do it now. So what's the next song, though?
The next song is On the Run. Instrumental piece performed on an EMS synthesizer, deals with the pressures of travel, which, according to Richard Wright, would often bring fear of death. Was created by entering an 8-note sequence into a Synthi, a.k.a. a synthesizer made by the British synthesizer manufacturer EMS, and speeding it up. Which, normally I don't give a crap about any of this stuff, but I really liked reading about it, like I said before. With an added white noise generator creating the hi-hat sound. The band then added backward guitar parts, created by dragging a microphone stand down the fretboard, reversing the tape, and then panning left to right. There are also other Synthi and VCS3 synthesizer parts made to sound like a vehicle passing, giving a Doppler effect. There are also voices in this song. Like Lou said, they did that quite a bit. 27 seconds into the piece, the sound of a female voice on a loudspeaker can be heard. It's sort of like an airport public address system. have your baggage and passport ready and then follow the green line to the customs and immigration, blah, blah, blah. But then there's also Roger the Hat, Manifold, Pink Floyd, Road Manager says live for today, gone tomorrow. And
Roger
couple,
the Hat, that was one of the, yeah, the roadie. Yeah.
Then a couple other things, spoken parts that are not that important, but you know what they are.
You know, some of these pieces like this one and the piece that opens the record are, they just add to the atmosphere. And I think there's some people that go like, you know, there's just not like, you know, there's not that many good songs. There's a lot of mess screwing around. It's not screwing around. Like,
it's art.
It's well,
to them.
Also, you have to put it in time. In 72, 73, whenever, there wasn't much to do. There was no YouTube, right? Okay? Like, a movie would come out and would be in the same movie, be in the theater for, like, a really mm-hmm, long time. Mm-hmm. Where it wasn't, like, a new movie on Netflix every week. I mean, you know, so people would get these albums and they would listen to, they would just listen to, yeah. You know, one, you would ask a girl, hey, do you want to come over to my house and listen to albums?
Which is just code for making out anyway.
But yeah, but it was like something, it was something to do. Yeah. And you didn't just ask a girlfriend. You know, you're, hey, you want to come over and listen to records. You know, that's
what are you looking at me for?
I'm sure he asked you.
That is,
Luce never asked
so,
me.
So an album, well, like something like this, people really felt like, okay, like I can just sit and listen to the whole album. It's like it just kind of takes me on like a little journey. Mm-hmm. And that was very important and really innovative because not up to this point, Sgt. Pepper's was the first like really like kind of started album rock. But, you know, for a long time, for years and years and years, for like decades, it was all about the single. An album was just, okay, you'd release so many singles. We're going to put that out on like on a little collection with maybe cover songs and a couple other things from our publishing catalog. And, you know, they would do that. The idea of an artist sitting down and crafting an album was kind of relatively a new kind of thing. And making that super important was a way newer idea. And so albums like Sgt. Pepper's and Dark Side of the Moon were really maximizing this album format. Like, what could we do with the album? Could we have a situation where, you know, each song kind of like melds together and takes you from place to place and you have almost like a movie in your head? Okay. Throw in a little LSD.
And you're good to go.
You're good to go. So you know, that's stuff to keep in mind when you hear these sort of sound effects, you know, spacey kind of tracks. That's part of what they're doing. What's next?
Next is Time. Bassist Roger Waters wrote the lyrics. Music is credited to all four band members. Keyboardist Richard Wright shares lead vocals, his last until wearing the Inside Out on the Division Bell, alongside guitarist David Gilmour. The lyrics deal with the passage of time. Time can slip by, but many people do not realize it until it's too late. Waters got the idea when he realized he was no longer preparing for anything in life, but was right in the middle of it. He has described this realization taking place at ages 28 and 29 in various interviews. I can agree with that. It is noted for its long introductory passage of clocks chiming and alarms ringing, recorded as a quadraphonic test by Alan Parsons, not specifically.
Damn, you know, I was going to bring that up.
For the album. You can elaborate on it.
The
album track also includes a reprise from the song Breed, sometimes called Home Again, when it is treated as a separate song. They performed the song live from 72 to 75 and after the departure of Waters from 87 to 94. Waters began performing the song in solo concerts, singing the verses himself, beginning in 1999 when In the Flesh and again with The Dark Side of the Moon live from 2006 to 2008, occasionally featuring guest appearances from Nick Mason and the S&M tour from 2017 to 2018. Gilmour has performed the song live on every one of his solo tours since Pink Floyd's Pulse Tour with the late Richard Wright sharing vocals until his death. And I have gotten to see this live by Gilmour, and it is fantastic because I was too young to see Pink Floyd when Pink Floyd was a thing back in the day. Because in 1994, when they toured, I wasn't allowed to go see them because I was too young. So. Mm-hmm.
But you saw the original lineup.
I saw Dave Gilmour.
Oh, I saw David Gilmour.
Yes.
Yeah. As Lily said, the harmonies with Richard and David on this, you know, and they just had a nice blend.
I love
it. They were
the
two people that, like, their voices sounded really well, you know, really good. They mixed really well together. You know, like Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham,
right.
people like that.
It just works.
This is a kind of weird fact, but I will throw it out there at their time of recording. Only a few tom-tom drums were available for the intro. To get the right mix and sound, the band had to tune each drum after hitting it, record it, then blend and mix it into a finalized percussion track. This was a time-intensive process.
I'll bet.
And no Pro Tools. There was no cutting and pasting, actual tape.
They did it the long way.
And on these on several of these songs, the mixing is so intense. All of them had their hands on the mixing board. Wow. And would be moving faders. They would nod to cue this.
That's
and
cool.
Cue that. And including Alan Parsons, they would all be doing it together. And it's a like kind of a lost art. You don't. Right. It's just not a necessary thing to do anymore. You know, you wouldn't do it because it can be done, you know, perfectly.
Electronically.
Digitally.
Digitally, et cetera. But mixing like that in real time, you know, okay, I know this part's coming up. This needs to, you know, and this needs a little bit more compression just as she hits that note is something that, like, it's just we just don't do. It can be automated, you know. It can be that note's a little rough. We'll just paste one in from another track, you know. Boom, boom, boom. There's a million different ways to do it. So here's what you guys are going to do. And while we talk about the next song, you are going to pick a number between 20 and 30. A number between 20 and 30.
And go.
Okay, and put it in there. We have it written out. Pittsburgh Kevin has it written down. I do not know what it is. Lily does not know what it is. A number between 20 and 30, and whatever who put it in first. No, you cannot type every number between 20 and 30.
You come pick on. One, or you disqualified. Pick one,
or yeah. We don't, you know, homie ain't playing. And you may only enter once.
Yeah, kids.
Yeah, Michael Goltz.
He has his pick in.
Okay, so just one number per person, a number between 20 and 30. Okay, so let's go on to while we talk, you guys figure that out, and when we come back after the song, we will go ahead and pick the winner. Real quick, you're listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Go to lulombardimusic.com or ludinirockandrollcircus.com to check out all the very cool stuff we have for you guys to become part of our community so that you could win stuff like this. Wolfscustoms.online. We love you. And Rock Rage Radio, you rock. Next.
Great Gig in the Sky.
And this rounds out the side one.
Yes,
correct?
Beautiful song. The song features music by Richard Wright and non-lexical vocals by Claire Torrey. The song began life as a Richard Wright chord progression known variously as the Mortality Sequence or the Religion Song. During the first half of 1972, it was performed live as a simple organ instrumental.
Fed organ.
I did say it. Accompanied by the spoken word samples from the Bible and snippets of speeches by Malcolm Muggeridge, a British writer known for his conservative religious views. By September 1972, the lead instrument had been switched to a piano with an arrangement very similar to the final form, but without vocals and slightly different chord sequence in the middle. And there it is. A couple of weeks before the album was due to be finished, the band thought of having a female singer wail over the music. They began casting for a female singer. Album engineer Alan Parsons suggested Claire Torrey, a 25-year-old songwriter and session vocalist. Parsons had previously worked with Torrey and had liked her voice on a Top of the Pops covers album. Ever since you mentioned that, it's like everywhere now.
Top of the Pops.
An accountant from Abbey Road Studios contacted Torrey and tried to arrange a session for the same evening, but she had other commitments, including tickets to see Chuck Berry that evening, which I say that is more important.
Already cool in my book.
Excellent.
So a session was scheduled for Sunday evening between 7 and 10. The band played the instrumental track for Torrey and asked her to improvise a vocal. At first, Torrey struggled to get what the band wanted, but then she was inspired to pretend that she herself was an instrument, which is kind of cool. She performed two complete takes, the second one more emotional than the first. David Gilmour was not happy with that, so he asked for a third take. Halfway through, Torrey stopped. She was feeling like she was getting repetitive and sounding the same as she sounded before. The final album track was assembled from all three takes. The members of the band were deeply impressed by Torrey's performance, yet she left the studio with a standard 30-pound flat fee under the impression that her vocals would never make the final cut, given the general lack of response from the band. She only became aware that they were used when she saw an album at a local record store, spotted her name in the credits, and purchased it. A 2005 out-of-court undisclosed settlement in Torrey's favor included giving her vocals composition credit.
Oh, hell yeah. 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 Hell yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Richard Wright is a great composer, and that's beautiful what they wrote there. But without her, it's like...
It's not the song.
Lick My Love Pump.
Yes, well, exactly.
It really reminds me of that. Yes. Every time it comes on, I go, Lick My Love Pump. Yeah.
Well, you know, 30 pounds is 30 pounds.
It's so funny it's so funny what time does. Because 10 or 12 years... I think it might be even 2005 or so... there's a classic albums episode that was released where they talk about, you know, this song and her singing, and they remember it differently.
Of course, they remember
it differently. Roger and David talk about it, and both of them were like, they said it happened very quickly. She was kind of and when she came out, what Roger Waters says in the documentary is that she came out and said, "Guys, I'm sorry. I dislike the best I could do." And they were like gobsmacked. They thought it was fantastic. So, like, I'm not sure. Like, you know, this is those things. Once stuff goes like a long period of time, different people remember things in different ways. Really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And if you could, that's why there's so many people who say the grassy knoll and no one shoot. You know what I mean?
I was a Woodstock.
Yeah, you know. So there's, you know, it's really absolutely fascinating how that is remembered. Today, but I agree, she absolutely deserved, and I had forgotten, I did hear that before, that she got paid $30 and said,
let's revisit this.
Like, hold on now.
Let's revisit this.
It's like the guy that designed the Nike Swish.
Yeah.
That was like $200 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no.
No.
Multi-millions. And there is provision in the law specifically for that. It's kind of interesting that, like, apparently this came up enough that somebody said, look, we got to, like, make this, like, a thing, because this is an inadvertent thing that can happen. And mm-hmm. it isn't really Pink Floyd's fault either, because they didn't really know you know what I mean?
I mean, they didn't even know they were going to use it.
Yeah, they didn't know, you know what I mean? So at that time, so they put it out there and, you know, so she took him to court and she got her due. She was going to get paid for that. It just was going to take a little bit of time.
I would like to know the undisclosed amount that she did get, though. So that would be great to know.
Yeah, there are undisclosed amounts in music. Most famously is Garth Brooks's deal. Mm-hmm. And then he never did it. He, like, stopped recording for, like, 10 years after. he went in and said, I want the Michael Jackson deal. He says he didn't realize like how big like he really was, and he started inquiring about the numbers. He's like, whoa, wait a minute,
hold up,
oh stop, you know. Wow. But and then it was settled, and it's one of those undisclosed things. Stuff like that is absolutely fascinating. Okay, are we good on this?
We're good on.
Are we good on to pick our winner?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Lily, can you take a look at that and see if we maybe hopefully get this right? But this has got to be the first person that had to type this number in the comment.
Okay.
Can you see him, Lil?
I can.
Entry is over now. You may not type any more numbers. No more. You're done. Okay? So I'm going to count backwards from 5. And then Kevin is going to read the number. So everybody take a breath. Okay, ready? I'm going to count backwards from 5. You read the number. No typing. Hey, you. That means you. No typing.
Stop it.
Okay. In 5... 4, 3, 2, 1.
Lou, the magic number is 27.
That means Tim Johnson won.
That
was our first number pick.
Oh my God.
Actually.
Congratulations, Timmy Johnson. And Tim, I haven't seen you in a long time, man, but Rival Sons are coming to Pittsburgh. Woo-hoo. And if you're around, we should go. It's the last time I saw. Tim and I only hang out at a Rival Sons concert.
Oh, I see.
Oh, is that how
he's
that works?
My Rival Sons friend.
Oh, look at that.
He says, woohoo.
Okay, congratulations, Tim. We need your, you and I are connected on Facebook. So just send me a personal message with your address and we'll get this in the mail to you here soon, okay? Matt, we know each other personally. You'll be able to message me. Okay, so cool, man. We rounded out side one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we did our giveaway.
We did such a good job.
We so rock.
I know, right?
Right? Do we rock? We rock. We rock. We love you guys out there. And guys, be of good cheer, because there are going to be a lot more things like this. We're gonna work this in. I want to give away the album every month when we do it.
Ooh, nice. Ooh.
So that is my plan, unless for some reason it's like not available. Some months you will get lucky and it'll be a vinyl. Not always, but you will get you. We're gonna do some vinyl as well.
That's a blues feeling spicy.
We want to keep it fun. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm feeling spicy tonight. So okay, awesome. Side two, flip it over.
Flip it.
Rock it on over.
Wow. Woohoo! Money. I like money. Released as a single, it became the band's first hit in the United States. Reaching
first what?
Hit.
Oh, I thought you said first tit.
In the United States.
First hit. Can you see how my ear might put that together?
No, reaching I still need more visuals. Go ahead, Lil.
Get the hell out of here. Reaching number 10 in Cashbox Magazine and number 13 on Billboard. Money is noted for its tape loop of money-related sound effects, such as ringing cash register and a jingle of coins. Do you have that sound effect over there?
I'm sure I do.
That is heard periodically throughout the song, including on its own at the beginning. Money has been described as a progressive rock, blues rock, and hard rock song. The lyrics are briefly referenced in the film Pink Floyd the Wall. When the protagonist, Pink, is caught writing poems in class by his teacher, the teacher snatches the poem book from him and reads in a very sarcastic, demeaning manner, practically encouraging Pink's classmates to laugh. The poem is a verse of lyrics to Money. The demo tracks for the song, including some of the sound effects, were recorded in a makeshift recording studio Roger Waters had in his garden shed. As recorded by the band, the song has a bluesy transatlantic feel, unlike Waters' original demo version, which he later described as prissy and very English.
Yes, he says that, but I heard it. And my first reaction, I didn't hear him say that, but my first reaction to listen to his demo is like, oh, it sounds like an old blues song.
Okay.
So, like, sorry, Roger, I disagree with you. I just sound like, it's because it's just him playing acoustic, and it sounds like something like a Lead Belly kind of.
Okay. Cool.
From 72
to 75 was a regular feature on the band's Dark Side of the Moon set, and it was routinely performed as an encore during the band's 77 tour. The later performances would typically last as long as 12 minutes. From 72 to 75, I already wrote that. So that's it. Done.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. What, careful.
It's interesting because I think this has this awesome riff. This is like one of the like classic guitar, it's actually a bass riff, but to play it on guitar too. And it's completely iconic. And there's really nothing else like it. And what's very cool is it has a time signature change to 4/4. And David Gilmour is like, they did that. I think this was a tongue-in-cheek comment. They did that for me, because I couldn't play the solo in 7/8. But I think he was sort of kidding around. But it really rocks when it busts into that. It just really, really rocks out in your face. And then they get back to that. It is, the saxophonist had worked with David Gilmour before. That's how he ended up getting involved in the project. But this is just one of those things that just, again, this album makes classic rock. This is like kind of the definition of classic rock. And this is one of those songs. It's just like, if you had to, I'm sure a lot of people are going like, it's so overplayed. Oh my God, I'm so tired of it. I'm gonna lose it. How about a podcast 15 songs about money?
Here it is. That's a good one.
And boom goes the dynamite. This when one, you're hot, you're hot.
This one also had a music video. I don't know if you knew.
Really?
Yeah, feature scenes of various ways of making and spending money and includes brief close-ups of a coin spinning, coins flowing in a mint, gold ingots in a bank, and a record copy of The Dark Side of the Moon on a turntable. But also, in addition, the video also includes shots of the album making its way down a conveyor belt in a factory and shots of a gramophone record and audio equipment being destroyed and explosives during the song's bridge, which makes a lot of sense.
The tape to get the tape at the right speed to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real bitch to get those sounds in that to sync
really?
Exactly with that.
Oh, I bet.
And they have the tape loop, and then they have it wrapped around the tape machine, of course, but then they have it wrapped around a mic stand. Oy. And like stretched out, and they kept on moving it until they could get it exactly right.
Wow. What a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Well, see, guys, this is
before digital.
Like, exactly. Yeah. There was nowadays, that's a button.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, wow.
You just press it's a button like for that. We've lost something. We just have. I'm not like, I'm not going to get all mushy on it, but
you're gonna.
But we did lose something because mm-hmm. stuff like that is just cool as shit.
Yeah,
it's just really freaking cool. Anyways, what I want to bring up before we get we wrap this up, get too far in. Well, we are pretty far into. Actually, we're done. I'll see you guys next week. No.
And that's it.
Thank you. Good night.
Okay. Yeah, we're done. So Kevin is not a fan of this album, and I want you to I love to hear the other side of it.
This fucking sucks. No.
I know, well, you don't think it sucks.
No, that's why I wanted to come here tonight to hear you guys' impression, and you know, Lily's talking about some of this, and now that I've heard some of this stuff, and I actually listened to this album 3 times in preparation for this podcast, so I'm not just going back.
You mean preparations A through G.
Right.
We're not right, but it was preparation A.
H. That's the one that got it. To me, the album...
Children.
Play nice now. To me, the album was very, very mellow. Very mellow. And you have to be in a certain mindset to really absorb this. But listening to some of the... Like the fact about having to stretch the tape to get the money stuff. I'm like, I have mad respect for that. And that's I kind of expected that to happen tonight, you know, listening to all the facts and listening to you guys talk about this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably going to grow on me. But it still is. It's not my cup of tea.
It doesn't speak.
Yeah. I want something to wake me up in the morning, and this would put me to sleep at night.
I'm going to go ahead and sneak in his apartment tomorrow and play Time right in his ear.
Okay. Let's, what I want to do, Lil, how many songs we got left?
One, two, three, four. Yeah.
We got that many. Okay, we're going to have to kind of speed this up because we must talk about Dark Side of the Rainbow.
I knew you were going
to say that. That has to come up. Yes. We have to hit that before we close.
Yes.
So we're probably not going to do any of this day in music or stuff today, guys. So right. Sorry.
I'll do my condensed version. Us and Them. The song 7 minutes and 51 seconds long. Richard Wright wrote the music. Roger Waters wrote the lyrics. Second single from Dark Side of the Moon in the United States, peaking at number 72.
It's very saxy.
It's quiet in tone, dynamics, jazz influence, obviously with the sax. The lyrics describe the senseless nature of war and ignorance of modern day humans who have been taken over by consumerism and materialism.
You can breathe. Between the songs.
I don't breathe.
Between the words, you're fine. We're not like, you know, desperate, but just, you know.
There's
just...
also dialogue by the roadie, Roger the Hat.
Roger the Hat. Roger the Hat.
Oh, no.
I think we
now you're finished.
Bite me.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
Go ahead, Lily.
That's all I got.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm condensing it.
You're not going to talk about the other songs?
That's it. We're all done.
We're done.
That's fine.
Of course, we're going to talk about
it. What? Oh, damn.
I'm done with that song. We ready? Yes, any color you like. Instrumental written by Dave Gilmour.
Hold on.
Hold on.
My goodness, you guys are, you know, what's wrong with you people?
You're rushing us along.
Just really what I want to say real quick. I was waiting to get to the song because I want to just bring up something really quick.
Okay.
Was that I think that this album is has a lot of different themes and a lot of different ideas
that being space, Lily?
Explored in this. And the significance of the title. Being all falls into this and the significance of the prism, you know, you get one sort of thing on one side and one sort of thing on the other side.
Right.
And they say at the end of the album, there really is no dark side of the moon. But I think that it's kind of a metaphor for where Roger Waters talks about this, like, when does life begin? Like, kind of like going like, where am I? What am I doing? You know what I mean? And is it okay to maybe explore another side? And I think this is a kind of like reaction to the sort of like what the hippie movement was about with kind of like sort of rejecting the status quo and things like that. Everybody's kind of on one side. So it could be a metaphor for a lot of things. It could be a metaphor for getting, you know, in touch with your darker side. There's a lot of things about it, but I think that the album cover does not tell us that. I think the album cover Discover says that there's some sort of expansion whenever you are willing to kind of try the unknown. Dark kind of being unknown. So okay. kind of reaching for that. And, you know, they, you know, this was the era where people had been experimenting with psychedelics and stuff like that. So it is, I definitely think that this is not a concept album in the sense that, like, it tells a literal story from beginning to end, but it has these themes. Next song.
Next song is Any Color You Like. Or is that what you talked about? Because you were talking about colors.
No, I was talking about, I was talking about Us and Them.
Instrumental written by Gilmore, Wright, and Mason. It has no lyrics and consists of a synthesized tune, which segues into a guitar solo. And there are some scat vocals that are added later, but these were more prominent in live versions. While the song is instrumental, it has been speculated that the song ties to Dark Side of the Moon concept by considering the lack of choice one has in human society while being deluded into thinking one does. On earlier bootlegged versions of the song, there was no keyboard solo. Song was a long jam piece called Scat Section or Scat. In 75, it was often extended, sometimes up to nearly 15 minutes long. Gilmore and the backing singers often sang along with it. And that's all I have.
Why you're like raining them down. Brr. Brr. Bing. Bing. Bing, 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 bing. And Brain Damage.
Sung on record by Roger Waters with harmonies by Dave Gilmore, who mm-hmm. would continue to sing in during his solo tours. Mm-hmm. He sang the lead vocal when Pink Floyd performed it on their live 1994 tour that I couldn't go on. Thanks, Mom. Band originally called the track Lunatic during live performances and recording sessions. Roger Waters has stated that the insanity-themed lyrics are based on former frontman Syd Barrett's yes. mental instability with the line, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon, indicating that he felt related to him in terms of mental idiosyncrasies. I didn't screw up that word. The German literary scholar... literary
oh my God.
And media theorist Friedrich Kittler attaches great relevance to the song, referring to its lyrics as well as to its technological arrangement. For him, the three verses stage the sound technological evolution from mono to stereo, culminating in total maddening sound. maddening surround sound. That's all.
I want to point out the lyrics. Two lines. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor, and every day the paper boy brings more. I personally have always thought that was a reference to LSD microdots. Mm-hmm. They come on these papers, and their folded faces to the floor, like they're passed out on the floor, and every day the paper boy brings more.
Oh, that's legit.
It's never lack of drugs. And there's one more, right? One more thing we got to talk about. Eclipse.
Written and sung.
I like Eclipse.
Yeah.
I actually like that.
Like one. Yeah. Written and sung by Roger Waters, harmonies by Dave Gilmore and Richard Wright. After Waters left the band, Gilmore sang the lead when performing live. It serves as the album's end and features a loud, repetitive melody that builds up, then ends into a very quiet outro. When the main instrumentation ends, the sound of a heartbeat, like I said earlier, from the first track, Speak to Me, and gradually fades into silence, which I think is a nice ending to the song. Waters wrote the lyrics on the road for Brain Damage and Eclipse closing sequence as he felt the whole piece was unfinished. The final words sung on the song... and indeed the album of the Dark Side of the Moon directs the listener and everything under the sun is in tune, but the sun is eclipsed by the moon. Waters explained that the meaning of these words as well as the entire song by asserting, I have to read this. I don't see it as a riddle. The album uses the sun and the moon as symbols, the light and the dark, the good and the bad, the life force as opposed to the death force. And I think it's a very simple statement saying that all the good things life can offer are there for us to grasp. And I'm not reading the rest of that because it's all technical stuff.
Interesting stuff. Great album. Congratulations to Tim Johnson. And before we wrap up, we have to talk about Dark Side of the Rainbow, also known as Dark Side of Oz or The Wizard of Floyd. This refers to the pairing of the 73 Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon, with the 39 film, The Wizard of Oz. It produces moments where the film and the album appear to correspond. Members of Pink Floyd have denied any intent to connect the album to the film. How it started was in 95, Fort Wayne Journal Gazette published an article by Charles Savage suggesting that the readers watch the 39 film Wizard of Oz while listening to the 73 album Dark Side of the Moon. Savage said the idea was first shared on an online Pink Floyd news group. Remember news groups?
Yeah.
Yeah.
According to Savage, the result is astonishing. It's as if the movie were one long art film music video for the album. Song lyrics and titles match the action and plot. The music swells and falls with characters' movements. Expect to see enough firm coincidences to make you wonder whether the whole thing was planned. Fans created websites about the experience and cataloged moments of synchronicity. In 1977, DJ George North Morris discussed Dark Side of the Rainbow on Boston radio. In 2000, Turner Classic Movies aired Wizard of Oz with the option of synchronizing the broadcast to the album using SAP audio channel.
Have you ever done it?
Cool. No.
I've done it. I'm going to tell you what. Okay.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's reaching. It really is reaching to me for a lot of the things that are going on. Like you.
It's reaching a bit.
Yeah. I'm sorry. For anybody who loves this whole concept, I think it's just you're hearing things that you shouldn't be hearing in my opinion. So I think it's really reaching on those things.
Detractors argue that the phenomenon is a result of the mind's tendency to find patterns. Hyperborea, I believe, is the technical word for that. Film critic Richard Roper published his assessment of the phenomenon, which he referred to as Dark Side of Oz. Roper concluded that while the band may have had the resources and technical abilities to produce an alternative film soundtrack, undergoing such an endeavor would have been impractical. Roper also noted that Dark Side of the Moon is approximately an hour shorter than Wizard of Oz.
It is.
I had heard that you have to start at a certain time, and if the thing plays, you play the album through twice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You play the album through twice. So anyways, I don't know what you guys think of Dark Side of the Rainbow. And anybody out there ever do it? Lily has done it. She was not impressed.
I'm sorry, that doesn't impress me much. Maybe I should have done drugs and then did it.
Oh. When I was in Nashville, I was in Nashville over the weekend. The Rock and Pod was awesome. Thank you, Chris Sinzak. You did a great job, buddy. But I had this Uber driver tell me, honey, be quiet.
Really?
Yeah, we were saying something and I was like remarking on something and then she had to correct me. Now, honey, wait a minute. You be quiet.
That's great.
It was funny. Nashville is an awesome town. If you have never been, please go. If you love music, it is Music City. And I visited the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah. How was that?
It was very moving. Good. Very, very, very moving. Some of it's now still make me choke up a little bit. But just a history and this very simple art form and how like it just exploded and how it became so many different things. And of course, you know, this is, you know, the beginning of rock and roll as well. Of course, did see the original press promotional release of Freebird on 45.
Nice.
Wow.
There's a lot of great guitars. You would like that part. Tons of great Chet Atkins guitars, James Burton's guitars, Waylon Jennings' Telecaster was in there.
Oh, cool.
there's some areas where there's like little documentaries playing with people like Chris Christopherson, Charlie Daniels. There was a record executive, I caught a minute of it, saying that, he said, we were trying to figure a way to bring the hippie crowd together with the country crowd, and Willie Nelson was the only country artist that ever talked about marijuana.
Yeah.
So we got to have him.
Willie.
Just because it's talked about doesn't mean it's not done.
And then it was, you know, the Merle Haggard, we don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. So, you know, there was that crowd as well. But anyways, it's awesome. If you ever get to go, freaking go. And Nashville's a totally party town. It's as big of a party town as New Orleans all day long. Great food. I gained 10 pounds. Yeah, you just eat.
Well, it's the South.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. So, shout out to Nashville. It's a great town. Thank you, Chris Sinzak from Rockin' Pod, for putting that all together. I know you busted your... I didn't even see him until like the next day. We were waiting in line to go to breakfast, and he came out and gave me a hug.
Poor guy.
So... all right, guys, you've been listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Our website is ludinirockandrollcircus.com, lulombardimusic.com. Please check those both out. There is some cool offers there for all kind of free music and stuff like that. Wolfscustoms.online. Please help our brother out. And rockrageradio.com is where you download the Rock Rage Radio app. great stuff. The Rock Rage Radio is a awesome program, so you guys should check it out. Lily V6, speaking of Rock Rage Radio.
I have my show Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Hot Licks with Lily 6, rockrageradio.com. As Lou said, get the free app. There's 24/7 music. Good stuff.
Good stuff, good stuff. I have really nothing major coming up.
No.
No, I'm kind of like got Rockin' Pod under my belt.
Oh, yeah. We have Horde Fest this weekend at Subalpine. It's I can't even remember the number of bands, but it's all heavy metal bands at the Subalpine, sponsored by Horde Ordeal, who is one of the bands playing. Nunslaughter will be there if you like Nunslaughter. I know that.
I know.
Sounds like a plan. And Mr. Pittsburgh Kevin, any closing remarks? Anything you'd like to add before we get out of here?
The number was 27.
And I'll see you on the dark side of the moon.
We should send this piece of paper to him also.
Right.
That's awesome. And congratulations to Tim Johnson.
Hey, Tim.
Send me a message. Timmy. Send me a personal message on Facebook. And so I can get your information so we can get it sent to you. Guys, thank you so much for listening to Tortellini Rock and Roll Circus.
Oh, now I'm hungry.
And we will see you all, as Lily said, we will see you all on the dark side of the moon.
This door I'm gonna